In this episode, I sit down with my friend Bo. He's a young, successful horse dentist who shares with us his discovery of life insurance, going from writing Index Universal Life as a licensed agent to learning about the infinite banking concept and why the infinite banking concept with dividend-paying whole life insurance is the superior solution. We had fun, and I hope you enjoy listening. Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. And you know, if you've listened previously, I'm always excited to have friends and guests on. And I'm really excited when they come into the studio. And that is the case today. I have a young man from New Mexico, right? Bo Kelly here. And we had a call maybe several months ago, and it was a good call from my perspective, very good call. You can tell he's salt of the earth individual, articulate and experienced. But I'm going to let him tell his story to the extent which he wants. But I would like to introduce you to Bo Kelly. Kelly, tell us, you know, who you are, why you're here, and let's just kind of have a conversation that we'll allow people to listen to if they wish. Kind of put you on the spot, huh?
No worries. I need to quit saying I'm so much anyways. This would be good practice for it, but. So I'm a horse dentist by trade, and I got my life insurance license in December of 2024 and was dabbling is about all that I'll say about that. I was just a dabbler. And every other year in the state of Texas, we have our International Association of Equine Dentistry Convention. Well, at the time, my brother and I were both selling IULs. And we kind of started brainstorming back and forth of what's the way that we could get in front of the most amount of people as possible, a young crowd that doesn't have, you know, that maybe isn't already talking with a financial consultant or something like that. So we thought, well, let's go present at the dentistry convention. Well, then we got a spot reserved for that. And then afterwards, we kind of figured out that we weren't looking to be in the life insurance industry anymore. And that's how I ended up talking with James on the phone, is because I was looking for someone to fill in that spot and come present. And James is going to do it, but the association actually ended up, they booked somebody else, which sad deal, but we'll get you in there one of these days.
That's perfect.
But, yeah, and so James and I talked on the phone, had to have been November maybe, and that's when he said, I mean, I just think I'm a regular guy with really cool friends, but when I tell people what I'm up to, they usually say, well, that's pretty cool. Like, so James invited me in for the podcast, and here I am.
That's a condensed story, right? And
yes.
I love it, and it's a highlight. So, you know, in that phone call, you ask if I would present, and then that sparked a deeper conversation. And I think I said, you know, if I couldn't speak, I would get someone there that, you know, is pretty astute about the infinite banking concept. But we continued to talk, and I was interested in how you became licensed. You know, here you are, a horse dentist, right, which – In my mind, there's a lot of time, effort, energy, resources, learning that profession, you know, and I distinctly remember somewhere along the lines of why in the world would you get licensed in the life insurance business? And can we dig on that a little
bit?
Yeah,
you bet.
Because, you know, in my mind here, you have a young man that's able and capable and knocking it out of the park that, you know, in this profession And I would kind of like to know how you got exposed to the life insurance and all of that. Maybe the answer that's part of, you know, where I'm going. It's like it didn't make sense to me why here you have an industry, a profession that you know you're in and you're doing it. How another profession would entice you to the point of saying, oh, I want to go do that, you know? So I guess, can you spend some time on that? How did that happen? I mean, you know, did you like go somewhere and somebody's talking about IBC or what, you know, how'd that happen?
So my brother, both of my brothers are my best friends. And
that's cool in and of itself.
Yeah. And we do most everything together. And in 2024, I did, I don't remember exactly how many horses I did that year, but I did enough to where I was absolutely sick and tired of them. Mm. And so I was kind of looking for something else to do at the time, because working on people's animals is all fun and games until you just start to just not like the animal anymore. And I like, that sounds harsh when I say that, but I mean, when you're working on something that's just fighting you every day, it becomes a little less enjoyable. And so that was a point where I was like, I got to find something else to do. Well, my brother had just gotten on, he had just gotten licensed and was selling, Final Expense. Yep. And was doing really well in it. And so I got my license and started riding under him. And, that's basically where it came from, was I was looking for something else to do.
I got it.
Because I had done so many horses in a short amount of time that I was looking for something else to do. Well, then, you know, going down the road a little bit here, kind of took a hiatus from working on horse teeth. And after I came back from the hiatus, I still love it. I still absolutely
even though they fight
it.
You all the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I still love it. And so I work on some awesome horses for some awesome people. So
yeah, it was like just the grind of the work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so how did you go from Final Expense to Infinite Banking?
So the way that all transpired was about the time that I got my license and was getting contracted, they were getting away from the Final Expense and starting to sell a lot more IULs. Well, so I started digging into this IUL deal and I thought, man, this is the bee's knees here. Like it's whole life. And I didn't know a thing about annual renewable term at the time or anything like that. I just started going and getting after it. And my deal has always been that I'm not going to go and call around anybody or start talking to anybody about an idea or a project if I'm not, I don't want to say well-versed, but if I can't at least tell you about it, if I can't explain it to a 15-year-old, we won't even say an 8-year-old, but a 15-year-old, then I'm probably not going to start telling you about it yet. And so with the IULs, I made some phone calls because they were just like, you got to dial the phone, which that's in sales in general anyways. You just got to pick up the phone and dial. Everybody's going to tell you no, but somebody might tell you yes. And I still believe in that 100%, but it was more of I got sick of not being well-versed enough to explain what it was. So I started watching a bunch of YouTube videos and about IULs. Well, basically that was when I kind of stepped back from it, because like I said, I was just a dabbler when I had my life insurance license. I never really jumped with both feet into it. But
did you already have your policy at that time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I had written my own policy with the help of some other people to get an IUL. And because at the time I was like, yeah, this is it. Yep. This is what we're doing. And I didn't have anything else set up. And that's the tricky part of being a 1099 and going and getting a college degree and all of the above. And then they just never taught you anything about finance. And like, hey, this is your different things that you can put money into. It's just like Roth IRAs just pounded down your throat from the time you're a freshman in college, it seems like. Well, we never really discovered anything else when I found the IUL. It was the best thing because it, you know,
comparatively to what you've been exposed to.
And you don't know what you don't know until you learn.
Yeah. And so after the YouTube videos, was Infinite Banking, go online, you find some YouTube videos, some guys talking about IUL and then comparing to Infinite Banking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, this is. So keep going.
I was gonna spend the money. I was gonna spend the money to go through the RNNI.
The course. NNI, the
yes,
Nelson
the
Nash?
NNI. So okay. I was gonna spend the money and go through that. And that was right about the time that I was getting back into being full-time on the road, working on horse teeth, and it just kind of fizzled is all that happened. I could go and do that course and, you know, really start to pursue with the infinite banking concept or get back with what I know. And I told myself, if I'm not having any fun working on horses anymore, then I'll, you know, pursue something else. But man, I'm having a blast.
I'm glad you're having a blast. So, so you go back into, the horse teeth, mm-hmm. having fun from a sabbatical, whatever, mm-hmm. you take time off and, but you have an IUL policy mm-hmm. and, you committed to speaking at this event. Mm-hmm. Is all that about the same timeline?
Yes. Yes.
And so I don't want to go speak at the event. and then, for you personally, when did you become, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but, a solid understanding or knowing that you didn't want to continue with the IUL? How'd that happen? Just going through YouTube videos and then finding the Nelson Nash Institute?
Yes. Once I found the Nelson Nash Institute, it was checking all the boxes that I thought that an IUL was, but actually did all of these functions properly, like with the paid up additions and all of that stuff that isn't necessarily in a variable term.
A variable term. Variable universal. IUL is indexed universal life.
Yes.
That has a cost of insurance component, mm-hmm. which is akin to annual renewable term. Mm-hmm. And so when did you decide that you were going to personally, you've already moved away from the life insurance mm-hmm. business and it's a business. And I think there's a lot here that, we could probably do two or three podcasts. We won't, but when did you personally make the decision that, because you'd already moved away from mm-hmm. life insurance as a business mm-hmm. back into your, I don't want to say first love, but a greater love, mm-hmm. the horses. But here you are with an IUL policy. Mm-hmm. What motivated you or what was your thinking? It's like, this is not what I thought it was, and I need to do something different. Mm-hmm.
It really came down to, I had kind of read through this book lightly and
very common read,
yeah.
peruse it. Yep.
And I had pretty much spend every year from like July the 1st through October the 15th hunting and fishing. And when you're hunting quite a bit,
July to October.
Yep.
That's a long time, man.
Yeah. But, when you're hunting, I'm not going to say a lot of downtime, but you got a little downtime to read. And so I really dove deep into this book. I read another book by a lady out of North Dakota.
Mary Jane.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
I love her.
After I read both of those, I had kind of realized, well, at least I have something in place right now, but I need to move my IUL into a dividend paying whole life. And once I figured that out, I was still in the woods. And when I got out of the woods, it's pretty easy to find you guys. Cause I just looked at the R. Nelson Nash Institute website and flipped through licensed agents, I read through profiles is what I did. And I was like, all right, well, let's call James.
Perfect.
And it said you were in Fort Worth, and I've spent a decent amount of time around here. So,
well, if you're going to be in Texas, you might as well be in Fort Worth.
Yes.
My humble opinion.
Yeah.
There's some great cities in Texas. West Texas, mm-hmm. Panhandle, all over East Texas. Mm-hmm. But it's tough to beat Fort Worth.
I talked to another guy before, but that is something that. If you're going to get in touch with somebody to get an infinite banking concept policy put together, I highly recommend James just because you guys are easy to get a hold of. And some people are impossible to get a hold of. So,
well, I appreciate that. And that's, you know, I didn't ask for that or encourage that, but thank you.
No, yeah, that's because, I mean, I was pretty bound and determined to get one of these in place, so I was willing to keep calling certain people, but yeah, you guys have been really easy to deal with. I mean, I'm pretty sure you picked up on the first time I ever called and were like, oh, dang, I got the guy on the phone. Like, that's cool.
I don't always answer the phone, but... You know, I answer my phone. We answer our phones, and we make callbacks if we can't answer the phone. It's like, and that's one thing, too, just if I can go on down that road a little bit. You know, here I've been a licensed agent for 35, 36 years, practicing the infinite banking concept personally and professionally because I do things before I know them, you know, and before I encourage other people to consider them. And I also know, and I've got nothing but harsh love, like that sounds Canadian. I've got nothing but love for the insurance agent in general, you know, and a lot of love for the general public. But if you're going to be an agent, present yourself as a professional, then you know, there's a little bit. I might take the gloves off a little bit with harsh encouragement, right? And I'm saying all that because I know that. A lot of people, they get some level of success, whatever that may be, however that's determined in their own mind, where I'm too busy to talk to clients, you know, and I just don't agree with that, right? Mm-hmm. I talk to every one of our clients. I don't always have a direct hand, you know, face-to-face with the client, constructing their solutions is what we call them, their plan, however it's going to integrate. But I'm aware of them, you know, I mean, before, while, during, it's kind of a collaborative, maybe, and I don't even like that word, but effort, you know, it's like everybody in our office knows our clients, you know, everybody, I mean, even though we just met today, everybody knew you were coming in, everybody are aware of you, and, you know, you're not the only one, right? It's like we have, you know, more clients, thank God, you know, because you can't do anything if you just do one. But and my point here is that, you know, I don't see myself as ever not answering my phone. You know, why would I not want to talk to people at whatever level of understanding they're at, whether they're advanced or they've just become exposed to the idea? I mean, all of that is very interesting to me, you know. So my point being is, I'm not going to stop talking to our clients or new prospective clients ever, you know, until I can't talk. I can almost not hear, but, you know, they make devices to, you know, help in that area. But, and so, and then that to me would be in my mind, you know, my commitment to Nelson Nash was to do my part. You know, I met him in like 2005, but his mentor, Leonard E. Reed, okay. He wrote several books, 27 to 35. I don't even know the total number. I can't find them all. And if I could, I'd buy them all. I got a lot of them. But Leonard told Nelson one time, and so Leonard E. Reed was Nelson's mentor, all right? And he even mentioned Nelson in one of his books Nelson shared with me, but Nelson couldn't remember which one. And obviously, I don't have that one because I hadn't found that. Anyway, that's a lot of digression there. But Leonard told Nelson one time, he said, well, you know, I'm going to take some time off so I can finish this book. He was writing a book, right? And he was not getting it done. So he's like, Nelson, I'm going to take some time off to write this book. So he took some time off, and he came back and later told Nelson, he's like, as soon as I, you know, took time off, it stopped flowing. And so I had to go back to work to continue the book and finish the book, which – to me makes total sense. You know, if I'm not going to like, okay, so let's, in your profession, if you quit doing dental work on horses, I mean, how long are you going to not participate in that actively with your own hands? You know, how long are you going to remain at the top of your game, delivering the services at the level that you would want to receive as your clients?
And I mean, it happens faster than you think. Like, you go 3.5 months without doing one. The next one you do is kind of like you have to remind yourself what you're doing a little bit. But, I mean,
yeah,
that's the longest stint I've taken off of it is about 3.5 months.
Right. And it sounds to me like you needed that stint if you're not liking your patient. You know? And so I thought here, you know, in my mind, you know, it's quite common when somebody gets exposed to this idea that you can control the banking function at the you and me level, and you can the infinite banking concept makes sense. And it's like, I'm all in, and some people need to, you know, the comfort levels are different for everyone, and some need more information or understanding, what have you, than others. But once we do this, and once we understand it and we're comfortable with it, and we actually test it by putting our own money into a policy, right? Which I think that heightens someone's understanding and interest. You know, you go from perusing the book to you want to dig a little bit deeper into it. I'm putting my money into that policy. Mm-hmm. Who's this life insurance company? What are they rated? What are all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And is this really true? Does this really work, right? And then when we get to the point, and it took me about 4 years before I quit looking over my shoulder, you know, like, what's wrong with this? This is good. And I kept digging and digging and, you know, I'm talking with Nelson and doing it and encouraging our clients to do it. And I'm still looking over my shoulder. It really literally took about 4 years. And I'm penciling every loan. You know, well, here this policy is supposed to do this, and the interest rate on the loan is that. And I mean, this building next door to us, we used to be there, and we moved here in 2017. And that particular building, 100-year-old building, original to the town square of Alvarado, and it's, as a side note, has always been an insurance or real estate office, right? And I have documentation of that. It's pretty cool. But I'm over there. We financed that down payment, my wife and I, the down payment on that. And then it went on a note, right, from a banker who graduated several years ago. And I think it was on like a 15-year amortization with a balloon payment, right? And this, back then, it was interest rates were 6-something. But dividends were 6-something, you know, I'm talking 6.7, 6.8, 6.9, whatever they were. But I'm penciling every, and I did a longhand payments, you know, on the note, on the policy, what it's doing. but it took about 4 years and a bunch of penciling, you know, on these different loans, dental, auto, education, health insurance deductibles. I'm penciling credit cards, you know, I'm penciling all these loans out. And it literally took me, I know it's a long thing, but it took me about 4 years to get to the point. And I'm paying premium the whole time, you know, in the first 4 years, probably on 4 or 5 policies, you know, I'm all in, but I'm still looking over my shoulder, you know, and talking to Nelson and hosting him, coming out and listening to him give his 10-hour presentation live and in person. Now, I know it's only 6.5 hours now that you have access to. I had no part of that. Before I got to, like, I don't even care. I'm not going to pencil another loan because I know I've experienced it. I've seen it. It's doing exactly what I thought and really even better, because the deeper I looked, the better it got. Right. So it's not that I don't quit learning or checking and rechecking things, but I don't pencil loans anymore. And I don't need an Excel spreadsheet to, you know, convince me, but that's me. And I understand some people are visual and they need that. I just don't need that. And I don't want to get off the track here. In my mind, you coming in here, and I really, you drove an hour and a half to be here this morning, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, you
know, it's like that was on purpose with intent, you know, and I appreciate that. But when we first spoke, and I appreciated the fact that, you know, you were responsible. Like, I committed to speaking here. I'm not going to do that. I'm not even comfortable in what I thought I knew. And so I don't want to, right? And I'm doing the thing that I love and I've been trained in and have experience in. And so you reached out. But in that conversation, you know, when you were licensed, you got off into, you know, IUL, and it's almost like you didn't know what you didn't know until you find out what you don't know.
Deeper.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, this isn't right. I mean, that's just pure integrity to me. So, but I see that a lot where people, we get started, it works, we're comfortable, and we want everybody to do it. And so we promote it, encourage it. But then that step of like, well, I want to be licensed. And then you're going off into another business that you have no experience in. So you don't know all of the requirements of that. And it's an actual business. There's no question. And the element of entrepreneurship is almost overlooked in my experience the majority of the time. You know, what's really required to put policies together, to deal with the life insurance companies, to deal with the underwriters, to deal with the exam companies, you know, not that these are bad people, they're good people, right? But there are things that are required in this industry that most people don't see, right? And then the idea of support or service is almost non-existent in this industry. Right. I mean, you're calling here because you'd already engaged somewhere else and weren't getting the support or service that, you know, you deserve and you would provide for your clients. Right. And there's a lot of that. So, and I'm not saying support and service to the level of we want our clients to be dependent upon us. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's the knowledge, in my perspective, it's the knowledge that available knowledge to support our clients and our prospective clients until they, encounter whatever the issues may be, where then they need somebody to like really be an advocate for them at the home office or whatever the case may be. Maybe it's financial. You know, this July to October, hunting and fishing, I kind of like an invite, man. That's a long time.
Technically, I hunt and fish 12 months out of the year, but that's the busy season.
I got nothing but mad props on that.
And that's kind of something that's another thing that deterred me, I guess you could say, away from pursuing a career and as a life insurance agent is what you were just saying about penciling loans and that stuff. Like, I never had the desire to do that. And that's what it takes to be a good one, you know? And there's a lot of people who probably wouldn't desire to, you know, go put in the extra hours at vet clinics or, you know, at different sorts of certifications to be, you know, I do not think I'm the best horse dentist in the world, but luckily I was trained by the absolute best horse dentist in the world. So that's the kind of stuff that I wasn't just going to be a dabbler in the horse dentistry. I wanted to be one of the best.
Yeah.
And I was willing to put the extra time in. And I knew I wasn't willing to put the extra time in as a life insurance agent.
Yeah.
And that's what separates the good ones from the bad ones. I mean, you just laid it out yourself. So,
you know, to me, and how was your experience, you know, and I'm not looking for good or bad, just, you know, an idea to share, you know, to give a listener the idea that your experience within the industry, whether it's an IMO or GA system, you know, I've talked about distributions to the life insurance company. Like they offer, you can go to your bank and you can buy life insurance products at your bank, right? Or your credit union or what have you. You know, you can go to a GA, which is a general agency, right? You have a general agent and it's full of agents. Or you can go to an IMO, which is an independent marketing organization. Or you can go to an FMO, which is a field marketing organization. Half of the IMOs are owned by the life insurance companies that they promote. And my point here is that these are, from the insurance company's perspective, these are just distribution systems or channels, right? Not good, bad, or indifferent. They're all different. They're different structures and however you got involved when you became a licensed agent with your brother, under your brother, you know, how was your experience with that side of the industry? Is there anything interesting, unexpected, or did it go about as you expected?
I didn't know what to expect, to be honest with you. So I don't really have anything to compare it to.
Get on the phone and call.
It was Wild West, which... Yeah, like it was get on the phone and call and get after it. And
just go ride it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's most sales jobs, but at the same time, I was just hungry for knowledge, I guess you'd say. Hungry for knowledge about it. And there wasn't much training with the IMO. they'd send you a script of kind of like, this is your guidelines of kind of what you need to say. And it was a good script. I mean, I read through it now and I'm like, well, they're not lying to you on here. It's just who's better at saying the script, and the more you can like move the script away from you and not have to look at it while you're on the phone, then the better you'll get at it for sure. But no, it was kind of Wild West. It was just pick up the phone and dial it. You're not going to make any money if you don't pick up the phone. And I don't disagree with that. I mean, right. I think that sells in general, but at the same time, it was one of those deals where you can try anything. You can try any occupation for a little while, but once you learn, okay, this is what separates the men from the boys, is kind of the turning point of like, are you going to stick with this or not going to stick with this?
Yeah.
And that was where it was the turning point for me. Was like, well, I found the IBCs. I like those. And if I'm going to sell this stuff, this is what I'm going to do. And then it just turned from there.
Yep. Going back to once we do this, we get involved and we embrace it, mm-hmm. and, you know, get past or not on the way of getting past looking over your shoulder. You know, I want everybody to do it. And my encouragement has always been, because I've talked to a lot of agents or people that are thinking about becoming an agent, mm-hmm. you know, have a lot of those conversations. And my encouragement is, number one, to read Ryan Griggs's Medium blog. Although he refers, you know, he doesn't work with new agents. He refers them to my office, and you don't have to call my office. I'm just saying mm-hmm. that I have a lot of these conversations, but I refer them to that. Mm-hmm. And then I encourage them. I'm like, you know, before you jump off into getting into this business and the entrepreneurship and the cost of the education and the time of the education where you can master something mm-hmm. for the longer term, why don't you pick somebody you like and you trust and refer your people there? Mm-hmm. You know, and if you refer, I don't know, 5 or 10 people, then you would have an idea how many of those 5 or 10 people actually, you know, became mm-hmm. clients or actually implemented this concept, right? And that would give you an idea before you jumped off in and spent all the money, time, effort, and energy to change professions. But most of them don't want to hear that. You know, for whatever reason, you know, they're like, no, I just want to get off and go do it. And I'm like, okay, you know, and then my encouragement is, you know, read this, watch this, read this, because it will help you,
uh-huh.
you know. I think the allure of getting paid, you know, in the life insurance industry, you know, like, you're just going to become wealthy. You just create a second revenue stream yeah. or, you know, a second income, mailbox money, or however it's, you know, presented, jumping smooth over. You know, how many calls did they encourage you to make in a day? Do you remember?
I don't really remember offhand, but
it's like as many as you possibly can. You're at $25 in an hour or mm-hmm. $40 in an hour. You're going to maybe talk to 7 people. Mm-hmm. And in today's modern world, do people even answer the phone anymore? Mm-hmm. I mean, that number goes.
No.
Yeah. It's like.
No. Yeah. Which it's, you know, some of the people that were filling out the questionnaires that were from the leads, like that generated leads for us. I mean, there was a lot of them just would completely deny that they filled it out. Well, then you'd run across your 10 percenters that did admit they filled it out. Well, then after that, you know, you want to help them get into a good situation. And I mean.
Were they like the horses struggling against you the whole time? Some of them.
But I mean, I deserved it. I was extremely green, and looking back at it, like, am I going to buy a policy, insurance policy over the phone from a number that I've never spoken with before? Like, it would take a pretty educated, like, the guy who can really convey the message yeah. for me to.
I've been told that I'm the worst salesman in the world, which I love and embrace and appreciate, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm okay with that. But then today, that we do live in the 21st century, you can mm-hmm. get on a plane and fly anywhere in the world mm-hmm. you want and be there tonight or tomorrow, depending on how far you go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel, and this is, you don't have to answer this, but in my mind, would you, if somebody called you and said, listen, Bo, I know you're in Texas or New Mexico, and I'm in Arkansas, and I know there's plenty of docs around here, dentists that can take care of my horse, but I want you. Would you go? If they paid you, you know, I mean, if you know.
I'd probably go.
Yeah. It's like if they've done their homework and they want you, you know, and they understand what it's going to cost and all of that, you know, and it's like, you know, I mean, you can't, I don't know, maybe you can just put your tools in a bag and hop on a plane and fly.
Oh, you can. Know. You can, yeah, for
get,
sure.
Get a rear end truck while you're there.
Yeah.
So, and my point being, if, you know, I mean, we have clients in all 50 states, right? And a lot of them we've never met. But we talk to them and we know them, you know? And if we have a picture of them, we can even recognize them, you know? But I don't think a distance is, should be. I mean, you've got to do your vetting and everybody is different. I understand that. But, you know, we've got clients, I mean.
Yeah, and I don't mean that in a way of like that you only want to do business face-to-face. That's not what I mean, but. Yeah. When you get on the phone with somebody and you kind of get to know them a little bit beforehand, it's easier to do business with them.
Absolutely.
'Cause like I've been using the same accountant for 4 or 5 or 6 years now. And I mean, I talk to the guy about everything because he's my accountant and he likes to hunt and fish. And I've never shaken the guy's hand. I don't even know what he looks like, but he's a good friend of mine.
Right. Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah. I mean, when I was back penciling that 15-year amateurized note next door, I mean, I was with that particular banker, and he was a teller at my dad's bank when I was a kid. You know, he got his first job as a teller at that bank. And so I'd known him for, I don't know, 30, 35, 40 years maybe. But then but I seen him all the time too, right? You know, he was right up the road, what have you. Then he graduated, right? And so I get a new banker because I'm now an orphan because he graduated. And this guy, Bobby, he's even been a guest on here. You know, I don't know. I've been doing business with him for like 14 or 15 years. But then there are a lot of other people that, you know, we've never met, whomever they may be, investment colleagues or what have you. I don't know them, but I like them and I trust them. And I know they're salt of the earth people and they're not going to, like if I graduated tomorrow, you know, my wife has a short list of who to call and contact, you know, and some of them she's never met. And I'm okay with that. And there may be one or two that I've never met personally face to face. But, you know, to your point that this is a people business, you know, the opportunity to go buy a policy through the mail or through emails, you know, that exists. But when issues come up or questions, you still want to be able to contact. You want to know that there's somebody there that's on your side.
Yeah.
And I don't care if they're in California, well, Canada, well, you know, Oklahoma. Yeah. You know, so, you know, coming to this and we'll wrap up here. But in my mind, from our conversation, you know, it was interesting to me that here you have a profession, and I understand that, you know, you fell out of love because they're being ornery all the time, but you really didn't fall out of love. You maybe got fatigued. These are my words, not yours. You go fishing and hunting, that damn near cure everything.
That's right.
It's like, then it's like you go back and it's like, no, I really love these animals. This is really what I want to do.
Basically, I think I know where you're headed with this, but. I did want to say this. So basically, and I'm only 26, and I know I have a lot to learn, and I'm still very green, and I'll admit that. But as far as I can tell, talking with other people my age or even people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, all businesses are the same. When you start, you're green, you're dumb, you're hungry. Well, you either can go off on your own and decide, I'm going to figure it out. And that's like a good 10-year curve, I think. Or you can jump right in with somebody who is good at it and apprentice for them and get the education, get the knowledge, figure out what you need to do to be better at it. And then you've cut your learning time down by a significant amount. Because for me, if I'd have just gotten certified to be a horse dentist and didn't go apprentice for anybody, I don't think I'd be half as good as I am now. But I was about 6 or 8 months into it after being certified, maybe even less, and I kind of got sick of not knowing what I was doing, so I got on the phone with the best horse dentist in the world, Garrett Bukowski, and just went and toured around with him, apprenticed for him, and that made me the dentist that I am today. And I think that it's the same thing with anything else. If you're going to be a life insurance agent or really anything, you can either decide, oh, I'm going to just figure this out on my own and that's going to take a while, or you can decide, you know what, I'm going to not make very much money for my first year or two, but I'm going to go work for somebody who is well versed in the industry. And by year, we'll say, I mean, year five, year six, I'm going to start having some business of my own because I sacrificed those years to learn.
Yep.
And that's, I think that's where you were going with that.
Well, I don't know where I was going, but I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. Because the agents that do work with our office, you know, and there's not that many, we're not an agency builder, you know, but I believe this industry and every industry, the apprentice mentor relationship exists and it's beneficial for both. Mm-hmm. And I've told the agents that are affiliated with my office, I'm like, you know, what are your expectations? What do you see? Is if they're, you know, if we can even work together and what have you. But I've used the words, I'll take 10 years off your learning curve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny or interesting that you said 10 years, you mm-hmm. know. And so I find that to be true. And because when I was in this industry early on, 1991, I believe, got a permanent license, life insurance license. I'd worked off of 2 temporary licenses, which are good for 6 months mm-hmm. prior to that. I was always searching for a mentor and couldn't really find one. I always found people that I thought were good, but then there were some ulterior motives and what have you, and they're not on the list for my wife to call mm-hmm. if I graduate, right? Mm-hmm. And then I met Nelson, you know, 14 years in this industry, and it's like, OMG.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that concept of apprenticeship is centuries old,
mm-hmm.
you know, centuries. So I think there's real value there. But, you know, in my mind, I think where I was going, the idea that you get into, you're leaving a profession, whatever it is, and you love this so much, and or you think it is, everybody should at least be aware of it. So you get to the point where you change industries. But then the further down the road you go, the more you learn. It's like, oh, this is not what I thought, and oh, this is not what I thought. Like IMOs, UL, whatever it is, and then it's like, oh, wait, I really love what I'm doing, mm-hmm. you know, and go back to that. I think that's powerful, mm-hmm. you know, because I don't think the life insurance business is for everyone. Just like being a horse dentist, I don't think everybody as much, however much they love horses, you know, that's really not for everybody, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you know, that's balanced with, you know, if I love this and I want to do it, you know, we all have to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not saying people shouldn't do this. I think they should be more aware of what the realities are, you know. And it's like the infinite banking concept. Man, this looks really good, and I'm going to vet it. And kind of like before the cameras came on, you know, we're talking about kind of structure. You know, on one end you have a shorter time preference, you know, just shorter term thinking. And so I want all high cash value. And then the other side is, you know, I got a long time, I'm thinking long term, so I don't want a big PUA. And we kind of talked about the mm-hmm. dynamics of that. Have you ever heard any of that in your education or studies of the infinite banking concept, kind of that conversation that we had prior to the cameras coming on?
Not much. Gone over in a few of the YouTube videos that I've watched, but
at a high level kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But you know, that's I think that's important
mm-hmm.
is being aware of what you're stepping into mm-hmm. as much as possible, mm-hmm. you know, and then avoiding the mistakes. And we all make them. And if you make them, how do you correct them? Mm-hmm. You know, and like, and granted, you're a young man, perfect. You know, you mm-hmm. discovered this idea of infinite banking. You know, here Nelson was paying life insurance premiums since 1945, mm-hmm. you know, and he didn't really discover, and he had financed things mm-hmm. right before 1980 in his stories in the book, Becoming Your Own Banker. You know, it didn't all click for him, you know, until he was born in 31 and this is 80, mm-hmm. 1980 when he discovered this, mm-hmm. you know, you're looking at kind of a long time. Mm-hmm. He'd been paying premiums a long time. Mm-hmm. So in where I'm going with that is, you know, you being a young man at 26 years of age, mm-hmm. discovering this, it's like it totally changes the trajectory of mm-hmm. your future unknown financial situation and experiences. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And you don't even know that. You can't even, there's no way to even see that. Mm-hmm. You know, here I am telling you, I'm like 62. My wife, I told some client we were talking, and I'm like, yeah, I'll be 62 this year. And I was talking to my wife about it. And she said, James, you're 62 now. You're going to be 63 this year. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you aged me in 1 year. So here I'm at my age, and I'm telling, you know, sharing with you at age 26, mm-hmm. right? It's like I met Nelson when I was 41 or 42, 40, I think 41, mm-hmm. right? And having no idea. And it's like, man, everybody says it to this day. I wish I'd have learned this sooner. Mm-hmm. And then they date themselves, right? If they're in their 40s, I wish I'd have learned this 20 years ago. And they're in their 50s. I wish I'd have learned this, you know, mm-hmm. 30 years ago. And then they're 60. Oh, I wish I'd learned this 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're 26. Okay, perfect. Young. And I mean, that is such a hard plus, discovering mm-hmm. this idea, in my humble opinion, at whatever level you decide to implement it mm-hmm. in your life is huge. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal because, you know, we buy whole life insurance, you know, the whole life insurance is yours for your whole life, you know, mm-hmm. however long you live. That's a long time. Mm-hmm. And the longer these exist, the better they get. Mm-hmm. So the best policy that you're ever going to own is the oldest policy. Mm-hmm. Right. And so
also just one thing that really stuck out to me about the IBCs is that it's publicly, you buy an insurance policy through a mutual company. Like as soon as I get a policy, I'm part owner. And I really like that because this country was, I mean, Theodore Roosevelt, you know, decentralized all of the big businesses and all of that when he was in office. And that is something makes this country go round is small businesses doing business with other small businesses, not giving. And I'm not going at any of the privately owned insurance companies because, I mean, they saw a business model and they've made it work.
You mean but, publicly owned? The stock type
yes,
companies?
Yes, publicly owned.
Yeah.
But the mutually owned companies, I mean, that's just the bee's knees.
Yeah. No, that the whole idea of mutuality is mm-hmm. almost lost. I mean, we have it in our credit unions, kind of, mm-hmm. they're mutually owned.
Because, I mean, just looking at the IUL compared to the dividend paying, company does really good. Really good. All right. Well, you're capped at 15% gains. Okay. All right, that's still good gains. I mean, it's cool. Well, your mutually owned company does really good. All of a sudden, a big dividend hits your account. Like, cool, I'm part owner of this sucker. Like, this dividend just proved it. So that's something that I really liked.
That dividend, I love that. And, you know, the dividend goes straight to cash mm-hmm. if you have it applied to the PUA, mm-hmm. paid up additions. And it buys additional mm-hmm. death benefits paid up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, there's no cost to that to you. There's no charge mm-hmm. to that dividend, buying that additional insurance, going straight to cash. And then it compounds over time. They keep getting larger and larger. And Nelson, you know, writes about it here in this 1959 state foreign policy, but really in becoming or building a warehouse of wealth, you know, it's like the dividends were 10 times the premium, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. annually, not accumulative. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, when people understand that, and of course that policy was 1959, mm-hmm. you know, and he writes a book here in 2000 or publishes it in 2000. Mm-hmm. I guess it's a long time, but this time is going to pass anyway. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, it's because you graduated. Oh my gosh, it's life insurance. Mm-hmm. That death benefit is paid tax-free to your beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost like a self-fulfilling accumulation. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like, it's pretty good. When you really look at it and compare it, it's really good. I say pretty good. It's really good. Mm-hmm. But life insurance has a connotation of negative. You know, we've been told that life insurance is a worthless place to put your money.
See, but that's the something that when, even when we were doing the IULs and people would say, oh, you're in life insurance? Well, I ain't going to die. Well, that's just such a bad outlook to have on it. Because for one thing, there are two things that are inevitable in life, and that's death and taxes. So why wouldn't you want to have some form of life insurance in general? And the other thing about it is this is not death insurance. This is life insurance, whole life insurance that you can use while you're alive for your whole life. Yeah. It's not, well, I'm going to keep pumping money into this sucker, and if I croak, well, at least my wife will have some money. Like, no, that's death insurance. And I mean, it has its place for sure. The life insurance that you only utilize if you die. I mean, that has its place too, but this is not death insurance.
And, you know, there's an argument been out a long time. And like by term invested difference, you know, well, they named it life insurance. It's really death insurance. It's like, yeah. And I have a couple of questions. Like your business, and I'm not looking for numbers, right? But your business, you need capital to operate, mm-hmm. right? And then your clients, you know, that do whatever they do and own horses, mm-hmm. you know, it's like they need capital as well, mm-hmm. right? And it's like another question, those are statements, but here's a question. Do your clients, some of them, what percentage would you guess, or maybe you know, how many of them insure their horses?
Ooh, I'd say between 10 and 20% of the horses that I work on. So I don't know. I don't really have a client number for you, but
right.
There's probably between 10 and 20% of the horses that I work on every year are insured. So it's not just a ton of them, but definitely my higher end barns that I work on.
I mean, they have jobs, right? Mm-hmm. I think I've done a podcast titled, you know, a horse needs a job. A horse is like money. It either needs a job or it's mm-hmm. going to wander off, mm-hmm. you know. I would think the ones that are insured mm-hmm. are some kind of profit generating.
Oh yeah, performance horses. I mean, 95% of what I work on is performance horses. So they're not going to get fed, shod by the absolute best shoer, you know, get their teeth done, go to a really, really good veterinarian that's not going to be your cheapest veterinarian. They're not going to go do all of this stuff if they are not turning a profit themselves, which that's all performance-based, and a lot of that's based on the rider as well. But you don't get into the performance horse game to lose money. Like, really, if you looked at the big aspect of things, then you kind of do lose money as a horse owner for sure. But you get into it because
you know
there
a CPA
is a prize.
Can make that work.
Yes. There is a surprise, or not a surprise, a prize at that's the goal, you know, of owning these critters that, I mean, they cost a lot of money, and they cost a lot of money to maintain because you're going to profit off of them, hopefully.
Yeah, so we look at, you know, in financial terms, oh, they're assets. Mm-hmm. They're producing assets. Mm-hmm. You know, they're profitable assets, or that's the goal, to mm-hmm. have them in the position to be most profitable. Mm-hmm. That's every business, mm-hmm. right? And then every business needs capital. This solves the need for capital, mm-hmm. the infinite banking concept, mm-hmm. which is the problem. Then the major problem. And because if we don't have capital, then we're dependent upon third-party lenders in whatever form they come, mm-hmm. right? So if I have capital or access to capital on a guaranteed basis, and I have a guaranteed control of that, you know, with the mutual construct, I mean, this is whether I'm in the beginning or I've done this for 30 years. I mean, I'm either beginning to solve my lack of capital, mm-hmm. right? And maybe that continues because your need for capital may change, but it's not going to go away, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Then if I have capital that I have guaranteed contractual access to or control of, then I can go solve the banking function, mm-hmm. which is the most profitable business in the world, mm-hmm. is banking. And now it's like I'm solving I don't want to say it compound type solving, but you're solving two major problems that mm-hmm. we all have personally or in business. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of time, mm-hmm. you know, so can't be done overnight. You know, we talk about the preference and the time horizon of expectations and what have you, but, and maybe it's never totally solved. You know, maybe you, the individual has so many great ideas and that are going to benefit mankind, mm-hmm. and they're going to need multiples of capital as we go. So maybe it's never totally solved, but you're reducing the dependency mm-hmm. on the third-party banker from day one. Mm-hmm. And then you're solving on day one the need for capital. Mm-hmm. Might be chipping away like an elephant. You know how to eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time. I mean, you know, we can go on and on, but I've already gone over, and I've gone over more than I wanted to.
That's all right.
And I apologize for that.
No, that's all right. But no, I think that I'm just a green 26-year-old that whatever. Discovered this deal, and I'm not full of knowledge or anything like that, but I've had certain experiences, and I think that, man, I wish all of my buddies that were that were my age would go ahead and get a policy, because I know that when I'm 45, I'm going to call them and say, let's go fish off the coast of Madagascar. And it ain't cheap, but what better way to do it than if you get the plan put in place when you're young? So, or if you're older, I mean.
Well, maybe you can loan them money if they need it. Right? You don't have to finance that on your credit card, 26%, 28% interest. I'll finance it for 15, you know, whatever. All right, Bo, anything else? Any parting words you want to share? You don't have to have any. I'm just saying, if you do, now's the opportunity.
If mom or dad listens to this, I love you guys.
I can't wait to meet you, mom and dad.
Yeah.
And so, okay. Well, thanks for coming in again. Greatly appreciate it. And I hope the listener has found some value, can find some value in it. I think there's more there. But what we discussed is,
we'll do another one here in about 3 years when I've put a bunch of capital to use out of this sucker.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. That's a commitment. You know, he made it. So, all right. Thanks again. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.